line. We need to be more like Europe. I've heard this from my friends on the left. I remember during the tsunami disaster, Americans gave a smaller percentage of our gross domestic product to the effort, say, than Denmark. Even though we were giving a lot more money, we were giving a lot more dollars to the cause than Denmark. We were criticized because we gave a smaller percentage of our gross domestic product. We had more to give. We are richer. We have more money than Denmark, in part because of our system here, which has been a capitalist system where, yes, the bottom line has been rewarded. We've had abuses, yes, in the financial markets, the mortgage-backed securities, Wall Street, lack of regulation of people like Bernie Madoff and the Ponzi schemes to the tune of $50 billion. All this stuff, yes. They're arguing financial reform now again. We had our guest on the other day, Richard Vigilante, who wrote Panic, How Capitalism Failed Because We Don't Disclose How Much Banks Own. Bankers don't even know what they own. I mean, there are all kinds of problems. Yes, there are. But the goose that has laid the golden egg for all these years has been this capitalist system, this private profit incentive. People need to have incentives to work, incentives to do anything. If they don't have any incentive to either keep their job or get a better job or work harder, then they won't. You could call it a flawed system. You could talk all you want about the unfairness of trade. But look, I mean, Japan was in a situation leading up to 1990 when they had their collapse where they only sold. They didn't import, didn't buy anything because they had all those tariffs. China could be headed for the same problem. So, I mean, there are no easy answers, but do we want to be more like Europe? Do we want a country where everybody is taxed heavily, more than we're taxed here, to make sure that nobody really suffers much? This idea of this European utopia, where Greece is already bankrupt and all of the countries of Western Europe have serious financial problems, even worse than we do. We've got heavy taxation, heavy unemployment. Oh, but they get 5 weeks vacation in France and they've got good health care there. You know, despite endless anecdotes to the contrary about getting in to see a specialist or older people getting in for a variety of treatments. Now, if you're very healthy and you don't need the health care system, you know, we have fewer people and they don't have to pay for defense. I mean, I don't want to get into this whole debate about who has a better system. The point of it is, do we want freedom of things or do we want freedom from things? The American model, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, they put pursuit in there because they wanted us to be free to pursue it. Now, that was that change. It was edited from the original life, liberty, and property. We have freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of the press. Now, Henry Wallace, who was for a while FDR's vice president before he was succeeded because he was too far to the left and Roosevelt was scared of him before he picked Harry Truman, actually ran as progressive at one point for president, 1948. He believed that we should have a Bill of Rights that said freedom from want. Freedom from want. He didn't want us, with all this money and all this wealth and all this capitalist excess, with our big banks and our big special interests, he didn't think there was any child that should ever be hungry and all this kind of stuff. We should write that into the Constitution. He thought we should say freedom from want, freedom from hunger, freedom from all these things. Now, that's the debate I think we're having philosophically in the country. You don't want to stub your toe. People don't want to have there be any pain because of this ugly, meritorious capitalism we have. We need to be more like the social democracies of Europe, where people are taxed more, but we have health care, the government takes care of it. We have 5 weeks vacation. And everybody is okay. Everybody is taken care of. It's not like here where our low-income people are suffering so much. Well, I mean, there are empirical comparisons to people who are poor here versus people who are poor in other countries. And we don't fare quite as badly as you might think. But that is, to me, the philosophical debate we're having. Do we want to continue to be a country where we have freedom of things? Or do we want to become a country, a more humane country, where we have freedom from hardships? Mark, hi. This is Newstalk 1310 WIBA. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Mitch. Just a little history. I tell you, I get so sick of everybody putting a safety net under everybody. I grew up in a very poor family. I mean, we barely could make ends meet week to week, month to month type of deal. There was times that we did not have food on the table that was what you consider a great meal. I mean, it was something that filled you, and that was basically it. But when I grew up, I said, I'll never settle for this. I will work my tail off. If it's three jobs, and when I got out of high school, I had two full-time jobs and a part-time job, and I just bettered myself the whole time. But I did that through desire to be better, and nothing got in my way to stop me. Where now, if you keep putting taxes on here, the person that works harder gets taxed harder, and you get no benefit. I mean, I'm sending my kids to college so they can better themselves.
Yeah, but Mark, I mean, you're taxed more so that everybody can take care of each other, and we don't have to suffer.
But like I said, that's where I was going to go with my point with my kids sending them to college. Why should I send them to college when they're going to get a poor handshake where they could just go and flip burgers and probably end up less hours and do okay? And somebody's going to provide health insurance for them. Somebody's going to provide housing because they don't have enough money. You know, I just don't get where just because you're breathing, you get everything given to you. Do I believe that we need to look out for some people that really have a bad handshake? Yeah, we could subsidize them some, but not as much as we are. I mean, crying out loud, pretty quick, we're going to, pay for everything for them.
With health care is we're not subsidizing people who can't get affordable premiums because of high-risk conditions or pre-existing conditions. What we're doing is subsidizing people who used to subsidize themselves.
Yeah, I know. This is scaring me. I really am worried about where, I provided health insurance for our family forever, and, now it's going to scare me. I always believed that we needed reform, but I don't think we needed a takeover.
Listen, Mark, thank you. But the core of the philosophical divide is on what kind of country we want, and we'll debate that and let you weigh in. Pretend you're one of the Federalist paper writers. Pretend you're James Madison. This is News Talk. Don Severson at 9:30 on the schools. News Talk 1310 WIBA.
Became so court-focused, I think that there was a tendency to lose track of the political and community organizing and activities on the ground that are able to put together the actual coalitions of power through which you bring about redistributive change.
And there was more. Actually, that's redistributive change. In other words, he said the Warren Court was silent on the issue, and the founders were on the issue of the redistribution of wealth. I mean, you've got a state senator at the time, the South Side of Chicago, where there was abject poverty. You had massive unemployment. You had almost no banks within miles. We've got more from that interview.
And its litigation strategy in the court. I think where it succeeded was to vest formal rights in previously dispossessed peoples, so that I would now have the right to vote. I would now be able to sit at a lunch counter and order, and as long as I could pay for it, I'd be okay. But the Supreme Court never ventured into the issues of redistribution of wealth and sort of more basic issues of political and economic justice in the society. And to that extent, as radical as I think people tried to characterize the Warren Court, it wasn't that radical. It didn't break free from the essential constraints that were placed by the Founding Fathers in the Constitution, at least as it's been interpreted, and Warren Court interpreted it in the same way, that generally the Constitution is a charter of negative liberties, says what the states can't do to you, says what the federal government can't do to you, but it doesn't say what the federal government or the state government must do on your behalf. And that has
that's good. So it doesn't say, as he said, he was saying the founders had essential restraints on us economically, and that the Constitution, the founders, and even the Warren Court were good about saying what couldn't happen to you, but not what the government had to do on your behalf. So what we have there is we have a change in the paradigm from freedom of things to freedom from things, freedom from want. How do you have freedom from want? People are always going to want something. Let's go to Bob. This is News Talk 1310 WIVA. Good morning, Bob.
Morning, Mitch. This is would be an interesting conversation to have, whether or not the state should be responsible for more entitlements or individuals, except for one thing. We're broke. Not only are we broke, we're so deeply in debt that we cannot tax our way out of it. If you doubled everybody's taxes, we'd still be tens of trillions in the hole. This is not a conversation we can have until we get the credit card away from the government and get the debt paid down.
Well, Bob, I think a lot of people sympathize with those sentiments, which could be driving some of the rallies you're seeing in the Tea Parties. There is concern that we have no money and we keep racking up debt on our grandchildren. But we'll see what happens at the polls in November. We have 1 minute to go. Let's go to Alice. Hi, this is News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning, Alice.
Good morning.
Hi.
You were talking about the divide and people wanting to be like Europe. I have a friend who has her parents came from Europe, so she went over to Denmark a couple years ago. She has two cousins that are left there that are 80 in their 80s. And the way they pay for their health care over there, one of the ways is with their gas tax. And that's why their gas is so high. What she was telling me was this: both of these men had problems. One of them had needed a heart a stent put in for his heart. Another one had a broken hip. And the one with the heart problem says, "Oh, you're okay. You'll do all right." And the one with the broken hip says, "Well, we just can't. You're too old. We can't do anything about that." And both of them died before they ever got any help. Now, if we want that, I don't think we do, especially with the taxes. And she said nobody owns a home there because they have to pay so many taxes to pay for everything.
Apparently, they don't take care of everybody. Just at a certain age, there's a priority list. And we've seen surveys done in England where the people over 80 get similar response times that we saw during the Soviet bloc countries. The younger people get hired first dibs. There's only so much money. And the alternative to saying no to people is saying yes to people, which is not happening now with Medicare reimbursements. Now we've got Don Severson next on the schools. How did we ever get $30 million short in Madison? And could it apply to you too? Don't miss this Outside the Box.
Give us a listen on your way to work, during the day, or on your way home. We'll keep you informed throughout your day. Now, Outside the Box continues on News Talk 1310 WIBA.
All right, everybody has a stake in this. Either you have a child in school and you care about that child's education, or you're a taxpayer and you pay property taxes, or you're a renter and you pay high rent because your landlord raises your property taxes. Everybody listening has a stake in schools, and I don't know what school district you're in. You are in one somewhere, but we'll take Madison, which is a big one, is sort of the model. They're facing a $30 million hole in what they wish they could spend based on programs and services that they do now, and they won't have the money to continue them. A lot of factors. The state funding formula is affecting the richer school districts like Madison. You have property evaluations. They're not going up like they were during the building up to the housing bubble where your home value was kept going up, 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 up. That's gone now. So we've had Nan Bryan and other people who advocate for more spending say that, hey, her property taxes have gone down. That's because those evaluations kept going up, and those days are gone. Don Severson joins me now, school board watchdog. And every school district should have a Don Severson, because you're there. You're kind of the guy in the back of the room watching everything happen, Don. You're like a character in a movie. I'm trying to think what it would be. Well, you're kind of the guy that's show me the money. But isn't that what's happening here, Don? We've got this giant hole, and other school districts are facing the same thing because we were riding the Mardi Gras for a while, the party. A cup runneth over because our appreciations kept going up. Our property values kept going up, evaluations. So we actually ended up benefiting from that with our property taxes.
Oh, big time. We've enjoyed that. As has the property tax owner been more than generous over many, many years of contributing to the school district, because we value education. But the concern has been growing about how are we using the money we have? Is it being used effectively? Is it being used efficiently? And for what kinds of things?
Yeah, and what happens is, just to keep it simple, I mean, when I've had parents, and on Monday we'll talk to some parents in Stoughton, they're pushing to pass a referendum. People with small children, they don't want to see certain services go away. But what happens is, if you have a labor contract for 2 years, and 85% of the money is usually for staff, either in classroom or out of classroom, salaries and benefits, and those contracts in 2 years go up by 9% or 8% for salaries and benefits over those 2 years, that in 4 years, that's 16%. And in 6 years, that would be 24%. I mean, so it just keeps going up, right, Don? And then the gas goes up, everything goes up. And so then that means there's no money for that program we wanted.
That's right. That's right. And when you try to build and sell a budget on the basis of the same service as last year, and those costs continue to rise, you can't do it.
Now, I've had people tell me that in the private sector, if you're talking about a job, you only talk about salary. We don't talk about benefits. We never talk about salaries and benefits. We just talk about salaries. And they think that's unfair that we do that with public employees. But there is a difference, isn't there? It's our money.
Well, yes, but not really in the private sector either. That money has to come from somewhere.
Well, I mean, the boss will talk about it.
Oh,
but,
sure.
But you know, their criticism is that we in the media don't talk about Donald Trump's health care benefits and how much he pays. In other words, it's just, makes $3 million. But I mean, but I think the difference is here it's legit because we're talking about taxpayers paying it, and we can't ignore the cost of health care, which is skyrocketing well beyond inflation.
That's correct. Exactly.
So we look at this paradigm and the fact that we're where we are. And so it looks to me, with $30 million, that's real money. So you're either looking about cutting a lot of things, making classrooms bigger, cutting staff, or you're looking at a pretty major tax increase. Isn't that where we are?
Well, yes, that's the dichotomy. Unfortunately, the district right now has the authority to increase taxes on property for almost $28 million of that $30 million proposed hole. They took action a week ago, Monday, to use up about $11 million of that, $11.7 mm-hmm. million. Four of that's coming from the authorization of the 2008 referendum that increases the ceiling, the revenue cap ceiling, by $5 million last year, $4 million this year, or for the coming year, excuse me, $5 million for this year, $4 for the next year, and $4 for the next year. And that accumulates. So they have that authority. They also have an annual authority to increase the property tax levy by a certain percentage authorized by the state in terms of the balance between state aids and the revenue cap. So for the district for this coming year, 2010 and 11, they have a projected authority to raise the taxes about $7 million. So that's a total of 11, and they voted a week ago Monday night to authorize tax levy for that amount. So that reduces, for example, in their mind, the hole that they have to deal with down to about 18 million.
Only 18 million.
Yeah, 18, 19 million.
Well, so how much does the average home tax bill go up based on what's been done so far?
About $150.
Mm-hmm. And so we got another $18 million to go. So
right.
We're looking at another couple hundred, right? At least.
Well, it could be. The projection was about $320 on the average valued home if they taxed to the max.
That's the first year, but then it would, that additional money would not go away in year two.
That's correct.
So in other words, in 2 years, that's 640, and then 3 years, that's 900, and 4 years, that's 1,200, right?
Keeps going up.
At a time when people on fixed incomes can't afford to pay anymore, whether their tax bill has gone up or not in the last 5 years because of the evaluations of property value. So we've got – the pressure is on now, Don. I mean, we've hit the point where we have between a rock and a hard place. I know we've been talking for years about finding a different way to pay for education. I know you've talked about being more efficient. But, you know, let's be honest. I mean, we could eliminate every administrator, which is the politically easy target. In the city of Madison district, I mean, what that gets you, what, about $12 million?
About that.
And that would save you maybe a year. And there was, yeah,
it's a short-term
fix. And if you're going to go in and start to pick at programs and save money, save a few nickels, a few dimes here and there, it's not going to be enough, is it, Don?
Not in the long run, no.
Okay, so in the long run, what is the answer?
Well, I think the long run overall is that the school district, the city, the county, and the state have to get serious about deciding collaboratively who has responsibility for what and how is that going to be distributed. Sure, it's still going to come down to taxes, and then whether it's property or income or sales or whatever, mm-hmm. that's another whole debate. But over the years, there's been an accumulation of the school district being the basket holder for everything that needs to be done. Now, the school district has reached out and said, oh, we'll take care of that, we'll take care of this, we'll take care of that. And on the other hand, then the city and county housing ordinances and regulations and the lack of economic development and all of those kinds of things attract people to the district, and a lot of those people who are coming here have needs, special needs.
So it's a collaborative effort. Don Severson, our guest, was talking about what to do about the school mess we're in here with this $30 million gap, which apparently is closed by 11. Yeah. 11, sorry.
That's okay. We still need a million is a million.
Taxes. A million here, a million there. 321-1310 outside the Madison area, 877-235-1310. Is the number to call with your concerns. Now, you have mentioned, Don, that you think it's time we stopped, as the school district taxpayer, paying for the recreation programs for adults.
Yes.
This has been going on for a long time, right?
Well, the school district here in Madison has been involved with that for 80 years.
Yeah.
But it's only one of five or six school districts in the state that has those programs under their jurisdiction.
So they run these programs basketball or volleyball, and adults can play.
But it's a huge drain on taxpayers because it's subsidized.
So should the city do it? Because if the city does it, then that's another portion of your property tax bill that would go up, right?
Well, that's
county do it. There's no way to hide, unless everybody just have a bake sale.
But what it boils down to in a great deal of principle. And that's PLE and not PAL, principle. That
the principle. Very clever, isn't he? Isn't he sharp?
Yeah. The principle of the whole thing is that is adult recreation and adult programs and so forth a part of the constitutional mission
of the schools
of providing K-12 education.
Wouldn't be the highest priority, no.
Well, it isn't the priority at all.
And actually,
but we've made it.
And they have some wonderful programs, and believe me,
absolutely.
I know. They had a class for officiating my son took last year, and it was wonderful. Yeah. But I mean, let's face it, there's a lot of wonderful stuff that we can't probably afford. Let's go to Peter. This is News Talk 1310 WIBA. You're on with Don Severson. Good morning, Peter.
Morning, Mitch. Yeah, I guess I'm having a hard time resolving all this. When I read the yesterday about the race to the top and a lot of the money that's available to the state of Wisconsin, and in the report it says that one of the reasons we didn't get that money was because of the teachers union tepid response to it, because they didn't want to be held responsible for the learning that goes on in the classroom. Well, not only Milwaukee, Mitch, I read the report, and it's also around the state. They don't want to be held responsible with standardized testing. And all I've heard in my whole life growing up in Madison is how teachers want to be held as professionals. They want, you know, we're professionals and we have jobs to do. You know what? Go into any corporate business, and if you don't have the money, pay cuts are in order. Everybody's benefits are being cut, and all I hear from this gentleman is saying, well, if that family on a fixed income has their taxes raised $1,200 in the next 4 years, well, that's just the price of doing business. And it's and I just don't think
Don is not doing that. By the way,
I'm not one of those. I'll tell you.
Well, somebody is, and I haven't heard one thing about pay cut, benefit cut. You know, I haven't heard one word of that. Anything I've read or saw. I mean, these people aren't sacred cows. They're employees, and we pay their taxes. And if nobody's going to stand up and say anything, then I just say shame on the people writing this thing.
The people you're talking about are the elected school board members. Come back with Don Severs and take more calls on this. The school crisis could mean heavy property taxes for you, or rather severe cuts in services for the schools. We'll come back. This is Outside the Box.
Get live in-depth team coverage of today's top local stories every half hour. Now more Outside the Box with Mitch Henk on News Talk 1310 WIBA.
All righty then. School crisis. $30 million hole. Actually, it's they just raised taxes because they got permission from the last referendum to go up on the spending, and there's about $11 million. So we've got about...
They could change that, but that's where they're at right now.
I see. And we're talking about the Madison schools, but this, the same dynamics are at work all over the state, right, Don? I mean, there's just...
to one extent
values,
or another, yeah. Yes.
By the way, when you talk about cuts in school services and making it more efficient, anytime anybody ever suggests any cut, people go nuts. I mean, if you're going to cut fourth grade strings, or you're going to cut fourth grade kindergarten, or you're going to cut, I mean, somebody's going to be upset about that. It doesn't matter what you say you're going to cut, somebody will go nuts. And isn't that why cuts don't happen?
Well, yes. In fact, the decision a week ago Monday by the school board to take off the table the ideas that were included in what they called tier four. And then the related aspects of that in Tier 3, which was basically all people, that was an emotional decision. It wasn't a rational decision. It was an emotional one.
Yeah. Well, we had the call from the guy that was there. You were there at that last meeting. And
yes.
He stood up as he started paying taxes and said, why don't we cut some staff? And they booed him. Didn't they boo him or
yes,
something?
Yes, they did. I was there.
Let's go to Carl, News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning, Carl.
Good morning. I want to take objection to that person that said the Metropolitan Madison School District should cut programs for seniors. Now, a senior is 55 and over. If they lived in Madison all their life, from approximately 25 to 40, they had kids in schools. That's probably even less than that, but that's 15 years kids in schools. So 15 years they've paid school tax and got no direct benefit from that school tax. Now they want a little help for their activities later in life so they can keep healthy. Now that person says, oh no, cut them off. They're still paying school tax. I pay school tax. I'm using the adult programs over 55, but I pay school tax. My parents sent me to parochial school. 12 years they did get no direct benefit from school tax, but they paid it, no question. And now he's saying, oh, you pay it, but you can't get any money back.
All right, Carol.
And that was my point is, hey, we're still paying school tax. Why can't we use a little bit?
It's like
bit?
Social Security. Go ahead, Don.
Well, yeah, you make a good point, Carl, but isn't it wonderful that we have choices and we can choose to go to school where we want to and choose what we want to do with our time and so forth. However, with the senior programs and so forth, they're good programs. Don't get me wrong on that. I'm saying that that's not a school responsibility, and the taxes for that should not be held against the school district because they have higher priority and other responsibilities, both constitutional.
Higher priority than Carl?
Well,
go ahead. You can say it if you want, Don.
I did, and I'll stand
Carl,
by it. Yes,
I don't think he doesn't hate you. He just
no.
He's putting you behind reading and writing
and that three. could come from another source managed by the city or the county or whatever.
Or maybe Carl and his friends could, have a raffle. Let's go to Rob. This is News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning, guys. I'll try to be quick. I just wanted to comment on the third page of the journal today, school board dumps marketing plan. I mean, my whole point to this is we've been talking about it for years, Don, you and Mitch, everybody that's got common sense. The fact of the matter that they came out with a plan to spend $86,000 on marketing the school district, did we have an $86,000 budget surplus that I didn't know about for the school district? I mean, it's the priorities that you always talk about.
Exactly.
The last caller, you can feel sympathy for that, but when you start putting emotions in with common sense, you're not going to end up with common sense. You're going to end up with an emotional answer, just like you were talking about. I mean, everybody talks about it. The school district people need to start, being responsible with money. The money's not always going to be there. You got to use what you got, and you got to use it the right way.
Thank you. Rob, when are you going to run? Chandra and I may start a draft Rob movement.
That would be great.
You've got to. Anything Rob should run, Don?
I think so.
I mean, come on.
Sounds good to me.
Don, a lot of people who think you're a curmudgeon and up there in the back of the room, like Ebenezer Scrooge, will tell you, hey, we need this money. And they say their taxes haven't gone up. You've mentioned why, because the evaluations kept going up. And but they'll talk about we need more school counselors and psychologists, so we need more support staff, and we have a higher risk now with children coming from troubled backgrounds. And to all of that, you say what?
Why? Why do we have that problem?
Because we have rotten parents.
Well, no, because community, because city and county policies contribute to that. The attraction of the university. We've had a reputation in the school district of providing high level services to special needs students and so forth, and that's great. But how much of that? To what degree of that? Is really a school district's responsibility, and what can we do to help mitigate those kinds of problems?
How about I still say parental involvement is the key issue. My mother taught 35 years. She said the same thing. I mean, she could always, the kids that caused her the most trouble were the ones that are the worst parents. I mean, bottom line, end of story, thank you. And when it comes to tracing how students do and their test scores. There was a guy from East High that wrote the book just looking at students whose parents came to teacher conferences. If you just took that one piece of data, you could see a direct link to how they did on test scores, how they graduation rates, everything.
That's right.
It's all about the parents. Don, you'll stay with us because we got more questions because
sure.
We have to solve the world's problems. And if we're going to do it, we got to do it right here. This is Outside the Box.